You're listening to Food Integrity Now with your host, Carol Grave. Hello and welcome to Food Integrity Now. I'm Carol Grave. I'm your host today. At Food Integrity Now, we envision a world without GMOs, a thriving world where our food is safe for our children and our grandchildren. If you share this vision, go to our website and join us. We love doing this show, and the reason we do it is to keep you as updated as possible about what's happening in our food supply. In order to stay current, we'd like to expand and take this show to a weekly format in order to bring you the vast wealth of information, some of the best experts in the world on your food, and to keep you just really informed about our quickly evolving food world. We can't do it without you. We'd like your assistance, and we'd also like your engagement in this process. The reason we need your assistance is to cover the costs of creating these podcasts and our overall operational expenses. There's really a couple ways you can help us. One, you can donate. Any amount would help. $1, $5, $10, $1,000, whatever you feel comfortable with. Or you can advertise with us. We are looking for companies, whether they're small businesses or large businesses, that would love to advertise on our site. We feel that we have a great product to offer, bringing the most current food information available. And we also feel that businesses will benefit from advertising on our site. If this is something you're interested in, please go to Food Integrity Now. And whether you choose to donate and click on the donate button or advertise, click on that, and we will get you the information as soon as possible. Thank you, and we really appreciate your help. My guest today is Meadow Lynn. Meadow is a speaker, writer, and chef. A gourmet from birth, Meadow created her first dish when she was only 3 years old. Impassioned by the tragedy of the Exxon Valdez oil spill in 1989, although only 11 years old, Meadow began writing a monthly environmental column for children in an Australian newspaper. Meadow is the daughter of Denise Lynn, world-renowned healer and teacher. When she was 18 years old, Meadow, a self-taught chef and lover of all things edible, started catering her mother's retreats, which she's been doing ever since. She's the co-author of Mystic Cookbook, The Secret Alchemy of Food. Meadow, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. It's such a joy to be here.
Well, it is a pleasure to have you on the show. I thoroughly enjoyed your cookbook. One thing I didn't mention in your intro is that you co-authored the Mystic Cookbook with your mother, Denise Lynn. So I just wanted to let our listeners know that. So my first question is, I'm very curious, what was it like working with your mother on this cookbook?
You know, it was actually great. And I feel silly saying actually, but, you know, mothers and daughters tend to sometimes have strife at certain moments. And we've always had a really good relationship. And we've worked together off and on for most of my life. But we weren't sure at first how it would work when we were really collaborating on something together. Because, you know, everybody has their things within their families that come up. And the amazing thing was, not only did we not quibble or quarrel while working the book, we actually grew a lot closer. And we started to think that maybe it was something about the secret alchemy of food we were writing about that was working its way through our lives. And now my dad jokes that maybe we've even become a little too similar, that I now have a penchant for working till midday in my flannel pajamas, just as my mom does. And the only times that we really would quibble while we were working would be our writer's voice became so similar that we would argue over who had written what. One would say, I wrote that. No, I wrote that, because our voice had become so similar that it really was a co-creation and a collaboration where we could no longer tell who had written which words, which was pretty remarkable because we're similar in a lot of ways, but we came to the book with a very different background. My mom is much more, you know, her history is much more in spirituality. She has a 40-year career in mind, body, spirit. I came to it more with a more kind of practical cooking section, but we really found that, interconnection between both of our passions where we were able to share this knowledge that we've gained over the years. So it was a joy working together.
Well, that brings me to the fact that this is much more than a cookbook, isn't it?
You know, it is. And we've even been calling it in a lot of ways, it's like a cookbook for your life, that it does include a number of, it includes a number of delicious recipes, in my very unbiased opinion, since I wrote the recipes, but has a number of recipes. They're all simple to follow, pretty much easy ingredients to find. But really, the book is much more than that. It's not a book of recipes. It's a book about living in ways to open up your heart, open up your life, to find more happiness, more joy, more balance through the way that you approach your meals, the way that you eat, not just what you eat, but how you eat and how you treat your food and how you treat your body can make huge differences in your life. A lot of people have this idea, and my mom and I too, for many years, that you had to struggle to grow, that transformation came out of hardship. And we've realized that it can, you know, like that phoenix rising from the ashes, you can have amazing transformations and growth from going through challenging times in your life. But you don't have to. You can grow and change and raise your consciousness simply through joy. And so meals are a wonderful way to do that, because we all have to eat anyway. So why not make them into something that expands your life and enhances it in so many wonderful ways? And that's what we give tips and suggestions and activities to help you do that in the Mystic Cookbook.
I wholeheartedly agree with you. I'm a foodie, and that's why I'm in this business. And to me, one of the greatest joys is cooking and looking at the beautiful food and tasting it, and the whole process I absolutely love. So what is the secret alchemy of food?
Oh, I'm going to give away all my secrets now, huh? No, the secret alchemy of food, it's really, there's kind of a couple parts there. And the first part is more on that physical base level. Alchemy, as you know, the scientists, perhaps part madmen of yore, were trying to take base metals and turn them into gold. And every time we enter the kitchen, we do that to a certain extent. We take individual ingredients and blend them together in a harmonious way that creates a meal that's more than the sum of its parts. I use the example, I don't even know why I chose this example, but of ratatouille, which is a southern French vegetable stew. And it's made with peppers and zucchini and eggplant and tomatoes, some herbs, olive oil, onions, garlic. And each of those ingredients on their own is delicious. But when you blend it together into this ratatouille, into this stew, it really is more than each one of those ingredients on their own. Each one has its own part, but it builds into something magnificent. So that on a base level is where alchemy happens every day in the kitchen. But then on a much deeper level, food is not just calories or energy. It's not just what we see on those nutrition labels at the grocery store. Every item that we eat, is not simply those items, as I said. It's our thoughts, our emotions, our feelings, our beliefs, our associations, our experiences. We approach everything we eat with our past, for better or worse, which means that if you're stressed when you're eating, you're eating stress and your cortisol levels go up and your body holds on to more fat because it instigates that fight or flight, fight or flight response. There's that word. Or maybe you have a belief that a certain food is bad for you. So more likely than not, it's going to have adverse effects on your body because of your strong belief. You can also believe something that's good for you. And this is not just this margarita. It's good for me. It's good for me. I'm going to have more. It really has to be something that you really, really believe. For, you know, whether science will say that it's good for you or not, but if you truly believe it's good for you, that research is showing now that chances are it will be better for you than something that you don't have that belief about. And we all know, you know, we're familiar with the placebo effect. People can take a sugar pill or saline solution thinking that they're taking a medicine and actually get results. There's a study that we quote in the Mystic Cookbook about chemotherapy patients. And a number of the people in that study were given saline solution instead of the chemotherapy. And I can't remember what percentage it is now, but I think it's somewhere around like 30% of the patients on the placebo, and mind you, that's just saline, lost their hair because they had the belief that chemotherapy leads to hair loss. And they weren't even taking the chemotherapy. So all of that affects our food in very powerful ways. And that is an aspect of the secret alchemy of food. And there's many more aspects of that, but I'm kind of in a nutshell, that is all interplaying into every meal that we eat. And when you can understand that, you can use it to increase your health, vitality, and well-being.
I think you're spot on when you were talking about when we eat, when we're stressed, the food becomes toxic, because I believe that the intention is the building block of the outcome. So if your intention is to eat a meal in a hurry just to get the, you know, what you're considering nutrients or whatever, but you're not enjoying it, my guess is you're not going to absorb those nutrients in a way that would be the most beneficial for your body. And so I think this is really a good way to look at your food in a whole new way, where people maybe just are eating in a hurry and not even thinking about what they're putting in their body, why they're putting it in their body, and really making more of a ceremony out of it.
Very much so. And, you know, this is fascinating. They did a study at Tufts University with Swedish and Thai women, and they fed both groups of women a traditional Thai meal. And the Swedish women, who didn't really care much for the sweet, spicy food, it wasn't part of their cultural identity. It wasn't food they were used to. They absorbed less iron from that meal than the Thai women did. And then when they reversed it and fed both groups of women a traditional Swedish meal, I think it was hamburger and green beans, in that particular case, that time, the Swedish women absorbed more iron than the Thai women from that meal. They had the same meal, but because of their cultural connection and their understanding of what food should be, they absorbed more nutrients. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it?
That is interesting. Now, one thing that you talk about in the cookbook is that your food choices can either expand your consciousness or restrict it. Can you expand a little bit on that?
Yes, in many ways, what we choose to eat and what we choose to believe about food can either limit us or, as you said, expand us. Many of us get locked in these little boxes of this is how we're supposed to eat. This is what we're how we're supposed to eat, what we're supposed to eat, and this is how you have to do it. And unfortunately, that begins to limit other aspects of your life. Because food, and why this could be with anything, it doesn't have to be with food, but food is so central to all life, that it indeed does, you know, it is at that center, that the way that we approach our meals tends to set a template for how we approach the rest of our lives. So as much as possible, when we can, as you said, make food a celebration, enjoy it, notice what we're eating, but also do so without judgment. And that's judgment of ourselves, judgment of others, and judgment of what we're eating. And of course, you know, it's healthiest to get the highest quality food and eat lots of fresh produce and whole grains and, you know, all the things that we're supposed to eat. But we don't always eat those things. But that judgment can also be harmful. But then beyond that, once again, that's kind of on the more physical level. When you start looking at spirituality and food, there's deep connection between the way we eat and our connection to the divine, whether you're religious or spiritual, however that connection is. And you can harness that. And if you look at religions throughout history, food is an integral part of the religions, because that too is a connection between this physical world and the ethereal world. So there are many different ways that food can expand your consciousness, and that's just a little appetizer there. We go into much more detail in the Mystic Cookbook.
You also say that certain foods can trigger past life memories.
They can indeed, and there's kind of the past life and food connection is twofold. You can either use food to either consciously or subconsciously trigger past life memories. And then you can also, if you know that you or you think that you may have had a past life at a certain time in history or a certain region, you can actually use food to call forth those memories. For instance, maybe you had the thought that you had a past life in France, in, let's say, I don't know, the Middle Ages. You could do research then to learn about Middle Ages France and create a meal of traditional foods from that time period. You could even get music and dress in the clothing, and simply recreating that experience can start to instigate these and bring forth. It's kind of like opening those floodgates, those doors of understanding and getting a deeper connection. And food is so powerful to do that. One, because it's something physical that you can take into your body, but also because, as I said, it's central to all of life. Food was a predominant part of life in the Middle Ages, and it's a predominant part of our life now. And it's really can be this wonderful thread that will connect you to your past, your childhood, but also to your far, far past, to your past lives. But getting back to your initial question, you can indeed trigger past lives with food. There is an example we use in the book of a woman named Jennifer, who, as a young child growing up in the Midwest, she was raised pretty much on traditional Midwestern fare. But at one point, she was taken to a kind of Chinese American restaurant, you know, the kind with lots of fried food, lots of kind of bright yellow and pink sauces. And she absolutely fell in love with it. And she was probably only 6 years old or so. And for the rest of her childhood, any chance she got, she begged her parents to take her back. There was just something about the food that not only tasted good to her, it just felt right. And it wasn't until years later, she was probably in her 20s, maybe even older, that she ate at a traditional Southeast Asian restaurant. And I can't remember now if it was Thai or Vietnamese. And she suddenly had this feeling of, this is how you're supposed to eat. This is how food is supposed to be. And she was flooded with these feelings of joy and happiness. And she realized that the Chinese American food as a child had been a stand-in, and that she'd had a past life in Southeast Asia, and it had been a really happy life. And the food had been this kind of igniting force that helped call forth those memories for her. And had she not tasted that food, she may not have had that connection, but it opened up this whole world. So you can, as I said, sometimes it's spontaneous, and sometimes you can do it, I mean, eat food with the intention of calling forth past lives. And it can be both fun and a powerful experience. And you can even work through past life traumas or difficulties or challenges. My mom, past lives are much more her area of expertise. And she's been teaching and working with people in their past lives throughout her 40-year career. And she talks about the past being malleable, that you can change it, or you can change the charge that you have on an experience. And you can do that by creating a past life meal. And in the Mystic Cookbook, there's step-by-step instructions for how to create such a meal and how to work through and change that charge that you might have on a past event. I mean, past events that can indeed have lasting effects in the presence. And there's some wonderful examples too that show how it does work.
I can totally relate to what you're talking about and believe this because when my children were small and growing up, I used to play opera while I cooked and created typically Italian meals. And I had no really idea why I did this. But the minute I heard opera music, Italian opera especially, I just fell in love with it. And my kids used to look at me as we were eating these meals, and I was having them listen to this opera, they just kind of shake their heads, you know, like, what is going on? And I'd be so joyful and so happy and in the kitchen and cooking and drinking my red wine and just thoroughly enjoying it. And later on, I've done quite a bit of past life regression work myself, and I've had many joyful lifetimes in Italy. So I can totally relate to what you're talking, and I'm really glad that you addressed this in your cookbook.
Oh, well, thank you. And I love that image of you cooking and playing opera and drinking wine. And, you know, all of that, not only was it kind of bringing forth those past life memories for you, I also, you know, I love that fact that when you're, you know, you're listening to Italian opera and you're cooking Italian food and you're drinking Italian wine, all of that creates this aura, this ambiance that all goes into that meal, you know, that opera, I'm sure, you know, those, you know, your children might not have been aware of it at the time, but I'm sure those meals were amazing because of your love and your joy and because of the feelings that you were feeling and that connection. You know, what, how different would it have been if you were making that same Italian meal, but you were playing heavy metal, you know? Or
right. And it's funny, as I was talking about it, I kind of got into that feeling state again. You know, I just feel really good.
Oh, I love it.
So how can the color of our food and the environment affect our consciousness?
Wow, in so many ways. And when talking about color, I always have to try to take a deep breath because I have a tendency to talk a lot and really fast because I get so excited.
So I love your passion, so go for it.
So I'm trying to slow down. But color is, it affects us in so many ways, and our food especially. You know, even the USDA right now is telling us to eat a rainbow diet because they're realizing too how important having color in our diet is. So of course it's important because different colors indicate certain phytonutrients and micronutrients. And, you know, there's the anthocyanins in the red and purple foods and beta carotene and orange foods. And all of that is really essential to our health. And the more array of color you can get, the more nutrition you're getting. Plus it's beautiful. But on top of that, color affects us in very deep ways that can indeed change our reaction to something, our perception. For instance, they've done research in psychiatric hospitals where they've discovered that when they paint the walls pink, the patients calm down. Yes, additionally, ma'am. Red is an appetite stimulant. Red is also a color that's associated with passion and vigor and vitality.
My favorite color, I might add.
Oh, I love, I'm wearing red right now, actually. But if you notice, what color does McDonald's use a lot of? What about Target, other big box stores, other chain stores, ones that want you to consume a lot, to eat a lot? Red, because it's this appetite stimulant. I always think, you know, that I figure that's why I always eat so much spaghetti marinara, because it's red.
Right.
It's the you know, it stimulates you. They say if you want to lose weight, put a blue light in your refrigerator. Blue is an appetite depressant. It's a calming color. They did a study with orange juice where they gave two glasses of orange juice to the testers. One was a darker color orange, but it was the same orange juice. It had just been dyed darker. It was a more vibrant orange. Most people thought that the darker orange juice was sweeter, even though they were identical. Then they gave them two more glasses of orange juice. This time the color was the same, but one had added sugar. This time the tasters thought they tasted identical. So it turns out that color and saturation and hue, that the brightness of the color, is more of an indicator of sweetness in this study than actual sugar quantities. So we are so attuned to color that it affects how we taste and perceive something. sometimes more than what's actually in the item. So you can harness that and use that to your benefit. If you're trying to lose weight, you know, eat off of blue plates rather than red plates. If you want to calm down, paint your walls pink. But also you can do that, you know, in your dining room and kitchen. Maybe you want to have a community, joyful, creative atmosphere. Paint your walls orange. Orange is the color associated with joy and community. So there are lots of ways that you can use color in, not just in the meals that you cook, but also in your cooking space, in your dining space, all that can have a deep influence on your experience of the meal, but your greater experience in life. And as I said, there's so much I could say about color, so I always have to try to slow down, and I could keep going for a long time, but I know we have lots of other great stuff to talk about.
Well, just on the top of color for one more minute, my kitchen is red. Almost all of my cookware is red, and, you know, I love to eat. So I'm sure that's why I surrounded myself with that color. It's so joyful. And I find too that when I'm cooking, I get really excited about the way it looks on the plate. And all the different colors, like, you know, if I'm making a meal that has some red and some green and some white, and, you know, I'll go, God, isn't that beautiful? And I'm such a foodie. I'm constantly taking pictures of my food and putting them on Facebook.
Yeah, no, I do that. I love color, and I will go out of my way. I have a vegetable garden, and I love spending the winter poring over the seed catalogs. I get a number of heirloom seed catalogs.
Wonderful.
And what I love about these heirloom varieties is the color. You know, why plant green beans when you could plant purple green beans, you know?
Yeah.
I've just finished the last of the potatoes, and this year I had gold potatoes. You know, those are pretty common, mm-hmm. but also there are purple ones that have a purple flesh. And then this is really exciting, and these are hard to find, but there are some, like the new potatoes with the pink red skin, mm-hmm. that actually have a pink flesh.
Mm.
So I think they're called mountain rose. They're not easy to find, but I go out of my way to find color because I do think it, one, it's just fun, but it's so beautiful. And the more beauty we can eat, the more beauty we see. And it tastes better, it looks better, and it's so pretty.
Yeah.
It's fascinating too about color, since we're still talking about color, that as humans, we see in color because our diet necessitates it. Most mammals actually do not perceive color the same way that we do. For instance, a panda sees pretty much black and white because a panda eats bamboo. It doesn't need to distinguish between different food sources. It doesn't need to tell, oh, I can't eat this berry, this is poisonous, it's bright red, but I can eat this leafy green, this is okay. It only has this very, you know, it has a mono diet. Whereas for humans, the way that we perceive the world is directly connected to how we eat. And I just love that. And that's why we live in this colorful world, because we're meant to eat a colorful diet.
You know, do you talk about feng shui in your cookbook?
We do, actually. My mom, for years, she started an interior alignment, which is a feng shui space clearing institute. And so there is a chapter in the book all about the feng shui of the dining room and the kitchen, because it can affect the energy and the food that you create. Simple, and there's little things that you can do. It doesn't have to be an entire, you know, feng shui makeover. And, you know, some of it's superstitious, but some of it really works. So even if it seems crazy, why not? So that we offer a number of tips and suggestions in the book to tell you how you can create, you know, quote unquote, better feng shui in your kitchen. And some of the simplest things you can do to start is just keep it clean. Clean your kitchen. Allow for what they call in Chinese feng shui, you know, the qi to flow. That's that energy. And I know for myself, simply doing the dishes, you know, some days I feel like life is terrible. What's wrong with me? You know, those days.
Yeah.
And sometimes all I have to do is do the dishes, scrub the sink, maybe wipe down the stove. Suddenly I'm like, life is good. Life is great. I'm awesome. And sometimes it's just as simple as cleaning my kitchen, because it's In this modern world, so many of us so closely identify with our home. And the kitchen is really the heart of the home. It's that hearth of ancient times, families gathered around the fire. And even today, families gather in the kitchen, they cook together, or maybe a mom or a dad is cooking and the kids are doing their homework on the counter or the kitchen table. It's this gathering point. It's the heartbeat of the home. And when that area is clean and clear and has this, you know, fresh, sparkling energy, if you will, everything starts to feel better. So that's one of the easiest things you can do. But then there are things that we explain more in depth in the book, but you can put a mirror behind your stove. Subconsciously, we tend to feel a little uneasy if someone comes up behind us and we can't see them. So if you have a stove that faces the wall, you might want to put a mirror there that gives you that feeling of expansiveness, that you can see what's coming behind you. Also, now we get into that more superstitious part of feng shui. When you put that mirror there, it doubles the amount of burners you have. And in traditional Chinese feng shui, burners are, it's that fire energy, and they are connected to abundance. So the more burners you have, the more abundance. And in feng shui, it doesn't matter what is real. It matters what is perceived. And if you put that mirror there and you have now 8 burners, it's perceived you've got a lot more fire energy, and therefore you're fueling more abundance in your life. So
I love that.
I know, isn't that great?
That's great. So we've talked a lot about the food and the color and all of that, but I want to know about the actual recipes, because I really found some of these recipes. So your cookbook is, as we've said, so much more than a cookbook, but it is so visually beautiful. How did you come up with the recipes? How did you decide on what recipes to use in this cookbook?
You know, it wasn't easy. I am a Libra. Making decisions doesn't always come real lickety-split to me.
I could have sworn you were an Aries.
My mom is an Aries.
So am I.
We balance each other out well, I suppose, in that way, that she's the fiery one, the quick decision maker. I mm-hmm. like to ponder and think things through and talk them out. Sometimes we butt heads for that reason, but mostly I think we're a nice balance for each other. But as far as the recipes go, I have been cooking for my mom's retreats since I was 18 years old. She leads training retreats. And during the school year, you know, first I was in school, then I was teaching school. But in the summers, for most of my life, if I was 18, I think I've been doing it for about 18 years. I've been cooking for the guests at our ranch for the past 18 or so years. So over that time, I've developed a repertoire of favorite recipes. I always like to mix it up and add new ones and change it up. I get a little bored doing the same thing over and over again. But there are a number of recipes that I knew were really tried and true, people loved, and they're easy to make. They're colorful, as you're talking about. They're healthy. I don't aim to create healthy, healthy recipes. I, as that Libra, I like to have a balance, but they're recipes that are easily approachable. Most people can make by simply going to their local grocery store, natural food store, or farmer's market. There's not too many crazy exotic ingredients. And I always aim for a blend of flavor and spices, and they might be simple, yet there is heightened taste. At least that's what I was going for. And I think they're all really delicious. And I do so hope that others enjoy them as well.
Well, you know, we have Valentine's Day coming up next week. Do you have any ideas in your cookbook, how to use this cookbook for Valentine's Day?
Oh, go ahead.
Other than giving it to someone you love.
Well, yes, that's a great idea. We have a section in the book about creating meals for certain energies you want to pull forth. We have a description on how to create an abundance meal, for instance, but you can also create a meal for love. And this can be one to pull more love into your life, to open your heart more fully, however you want to have, you know, however you want to bring love into your life, I guess. And this isn't, you know, we've talked, we have a section on enchantments, and it's not that you can compel somebody else to fall in love with you, because, you know, what's the fun in that? It's more about being open to love, bringing it forth, expanding it. So we talk a lot about cooking with intention. That can be as you sprinkle the spices into your stew or your soup or your curry, whatever it is you're making, you sprinkle them in with intention. And as I put this pepper in, I am sprinkling love, or I am sprinkling joy, or I am sprinkling entertainment, whatever it is, you can do that with that intention. I am stirring in more joy, happiness, love into this. Or as you're chopping, I'm chopping away the things I don't need. So there are very physical things that you can do in the kitchen to add more intention, to infuse more energy, ideas into your food. But talking about the specific recipes for Valentine's Day, I would say there is a recipe in there for poached pears. They are, I think the recipe is called, oh goodness, now I'm having a little bit of a brain meltdown, but I think it's Seckel pears stewed in red wine. And it is a gorgeous dish. Seckel pears, these little tiny ones, and you peel them and you slowly cook them in red wine with some star anise, some cinnamon, some sugar. And the pears come out this beautiful, beautiful, luscious kind of pink purple color. And you can eat them like that or with a scoop of ice cream. And it is beautiful. They're simple to make. They're beautiful. They're elegant. It would make a beautiful, how many times can I say beautiful? Oh my goodness, that's embarrassing.
I love it.
But it would be a wonderful dessert for any Valentine's dinner, for either a special someone, or if that special someone is yourself, because really that's the first person that you need to treat with care and respect is yourself.
Absolutely. So in the cookbook, you also talk a little bit about wine. And, you know, I enjoy sharing, you know, a glass of wine or a bottle of wine with a champ. I didn't want to say I enjoy a bottle of wine while I'm cooking. I am not Julia Child. But I do enjoy it. And it, you know, I've tried to explain this to people that don't drink wine, is I can't imagine eating a great meal without pairing it with a great wine.
You really are Italian.
I know. And you know, it's to me, they just go hand in hand. What do you say about that?
I agree in many ways. For those who don't drink, I think there are other alternatives, other things that they can drink that can also enhance or accompany their meal. But for those of us who do drink wine, I wholeheartedly agree. I have a master's degree in French cultural studies. I've studied in France for a couple years. I'm a huge proponent of pairing that wine with the meal and enhancing both the wine and the meal with that accompaniment. And I live in wine country, so how could I not be on the cheerleading force for wine? But what we write about in the Mystic Cookbook, and this is something my mom is really passionate about, is sacred wine for sacred purposes. If you look at history, you know, biblical history, the first miracle that Jesus performed was turning water into wine in Cana. So wine has a very historical, religious significance. And wine holds energy, even more so than water. And what my mom talks about is, you know, you can put an affirmation underneath the bottle of wine, or maybe even write it on the bottle, and that will actually, and I know it sounds kind of woo-woo to me, but it works. You know, you put it into that bottle and it will infuse that bottle, and it will hold that energy. You can also hold the bottle in your hand and that energy goes into the wine. And so you can be drinking wine because it tastes good, pairs well with your meal, but you can also use it for sacred purposes to enhance whatever it is you want in your life.
Oh, that's absolutely beautiful, and I totally agree with you on that. Well, I absolutely love this cookbook, and I will tell you that I get sent many cookbooks by a lot of different media people. They want me to interview the authors on my show, and I do very few because I'm not a cookbook show. But this book is so beautiful, and it just spoke to me in such a big way that I had to do this interview. So I really highly recommend this cookbook, and I don't do that very often.
Oh, thank you so much, Carol.
Well, Metal, where can people get this cookbook? Again, it's called The Mystic Cookbook, The Secret Alchemy of Food.
It's available at any retailer, hopefully, definitely on Amazon from the publisher, Hay House, so from hayhouse.com. And we have a website for the cookbook specifically that has some recipes, a few excerpts, a little sneak peek, and that is themysticcookbook.com.
Wonderful. Well, again, just enjoying your meals and going through the whole ritual of eating can really take us back to that place of peace and enjoyment and laughter and joy. So perhaps this cookbook is a tool for creating that. So thank you so much, Meadow, for being a guest on our show today. I thoroughly enjoyed doing this show with you. I just had so much fun.
Thank you. Me too.
Yeah, it was really great. And thank you all our listeners for listening today. And next week on our show, we are going to be talking with Dr. William Davis, the author of Wheat Belly. And he's going to be talking to us about gluten, which is a fascinating subject right now and one that's near and dear to my heart because I am gluten free. So he will be on the show next week. And if you like what you hear, please head on over to iTunes and, leave a comment for us. We'd appreciate it. Thank you all, and we'll be on the air next week. And as always, stay active and stay healthy and be well.